Please be seated. Lil will come and share the scripture.
I'm reading from Luke 14, 1 and 7 to 14. On one occasion, when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. When he noticed how the guests chose places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit at the place of honor in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place. And then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friend or brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors in case that they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous.
So the first part of this passage reads to me sort of like an advice column from Jesus. I was thinking about the name, maybe Gems from Jesus. Dear readers, I recently went to a dinner party and saw people pushing to get to the seats of honor. This is not the recommended way to behave. Proper wedding and banquet etiquette would suggest, that's sort of the feel, isn't it? Jesus giving social etiquette advice. But of course, there is one big difference. If you look closely at the story, you realize he's talking to the people who are doing it while they're doing it. I mean, they've just done it, and then he's calling them out. Jesus had a way of doing that, of telling stories that pushed people to reexamine their lives. In this story, you can picture the wedding, the head table, the places of honor, and the other tables carefully arranged. Now, of course, in our weddings, the seats are clearly designated, right? The seating, people have agonized over it at some point. Who's going to sit where? And there are beautiful little cards that tell you exactly where you're supposed to be. But that was not true in Jesus' day. And in fact, it's not true in many weddings still today. In many cultures, you don't invite a set list of people. That's one thing you don't have to worry about. Instead, you invite the whole community. I experienced this growing up in Bangladesh. I experienced it in different Burmese ethnic communities in Rochester. Everyone is invited. In fact, not to invite everyone is to be seen as cheap and selfish, and it's a matter of shame because you sort of think, well, what's the problem with you? Can't your family afford everybody? Because it costs money to feed the whole community. And it also sets up a certain uncertainty, right? Who's going to come? How many are we preparing for? And then there's these other questions. Will the really important people make the time to show up for our wedding? Will they honor our family by attending? And if they do, of course, then they must get the seats of most honor and respect. So can you see how it might play out? Someone arrives and looks around and thinks, oh, I'm the most important person here, so of course I should sit in the seat right there at the front. And at the time, the hosts are okay with that, because at that point, they are the most important person there. But then somebody else shows up, somebody more important, more influential. And at that point, you're in trouble, because you must show honor and respect to the people that they deserve, or else you're shaming your family. So the host really have no choice. They have to make sure the most important people get the seats of most honor. You can almost picture the distress and agitation, can't you? The little whispered conversations. Oh no, the mayor's here. Oh no, the pastor's here. The awkward moment when you have to go tell somebody, excuse me, you need to move. You're in the wrong place. Now, Jesus's point, of course, was not just proper wedding and banquet etiquette. This is a teaching, I think, about the dangers of being caught up in trying to claim honor and attention for yourself. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, he said, but all who humble themselves will be exalted. Our weddings may be different here in America, but I think contemporary American culture knows quite a lot about self-promotion, about the push to get attention, the power of being a celebrity. Advertising, reality TV shows, and all sorts of social media play right into it, don't they? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. People who have become known not for anything they have ever done, except that somehow they made themselves famous. Dare I say, the Kardashians? How do people get sucked into caring about what these people are doing, about their random thoughts, about what they had for dinner? But they have become a news source in themselves. We get so caught up in the attention-seeking behavior of certain athletes. Anybody heard of Antonio Brown this week? My husband's a Raiders fan. Or celebrities or politicians, yes, at all levels. We live in a culture that teaches self-promotion, from getting into college to applying for scholarships to creating your own website or running for public office. Know the right people, be seen in the right places, network with the powerful and the influential, get attention, promote yourself. And yet, behind the scenes, people are lonely and alienated. Research shows an alarming rise in the number of people, particularly younger people, who feel they don't have any real friends. And the research shows the more time these people spend on social media, the less friends they feel they have. It's a vicious cycle. Watching other people present on social media this facade of their happy, fulfilled lives, and feeling worse and worse about yourself. And yet all these people are actually desperately promoting themselves to make others think they are happy and fulfilled, where it may not be the reality of what's going on at all. Somehow it gives us a different take on all who exalt themselves will be humbled, doesn't it? To think about the public persona and the private pain so many people are enduring. Jesus, as always, turns it all upside down. Jesus has something very different to say. Don't promote yourself. Don't try to get attention for yourself. Don't think so much of yourself. Know who you are. Know you're a human being like everybody else. And claim your place with ordinary folks. Be humble in the best sense. Glad to be one with everybody else, happy to be together. That's what Jesus did, didn't he? Jesus, the carpenter, the country rabbi from Galilee. He didn't have wealth or power or status. He was glad to be an ordinary person, a human like the rest of us. And Jesus goes on to say, when you have your own dinner party, don't just invite those who can pay you back. Your family or your friends or your rich neighbors. He challenges a very basic principle, doesn't he? In sociology, they call it reciprocity. If someone gives you a gift, you should give them a gift back. If someone invites you to dinner, you should invite them back. We were taught really early, that's what's polite. That's the way you're supposed to behave, right? You remember that awkward moment when you realize, those times when someone has given you a gift and you realize, I don't have anything for them, right? And you kind of scramble to try to get one. Anybody ever done that? Jesus calls us to live by a very different ethic. Jesus calls us to radical hospitality, to invite what he calls the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind to our dinners. If you're honest, can you feel your discomfort starting to rise when you picture yourself actually doing this? I can. I mean, it sounds nice, but in practice, it gets messy and uncomfortable really fast. Does Jesus really mean we're supposed to open our homes and our churches to strangers? People who not only cannot repay us, but may not act the way we think they should? To people who may not smell good or act nice? People who are social outcasts? People who might be tempted to check the coat pockets in the hallways? Or who may not be smiling and grateful for the food we've given them? And of course, it's not just the literal poor and crippled and blind and lame that Jesus is calling us to invite and welcome. There are lots of other ways that people may be strangers to us. Lots of ways people can be different. Can we be honest with ourselves about what people might challenge us the most if they walk through the door this morning? Who would push us out of our comfort zone? Who might upset us? What about them would be hard? Would it be their mental health? Would it be their social class? Would it be their politics? In our visioning process as a church so far, we've tried to identify values that define who we are as a church. And one of those values is clearly around being welcoming. We were welcomed here. We feel welcome here. That's why we're still here. And we know that for those of us who are a part of this place, this is a place of belonging and nurture and support. We value being a place of welcome and hospitality. Robert Schnees, in his book, Five Practices of Fruitful Congregations, lists as number one practice radical hospitality. He defines hospitality as the active desire to invite, welcome, receive, and care for those who are strangers so they find a spiritual home. If this is our home, are we willing to share it? Can we see that there are others who might truly need the love and support we find here? It goes beyond just being friendly when people walk through the door, doesn't it? It involves genuine concern for those who are outside our community and a desire to reach out and invite them in. And to do that, we have to deal with some of our built-up negativity about evangelism, don't we? Yes. A lot of us have negative associations with people pushing Jesus. What do we do with those? And do we keep them from finding our authentic ways of being inviting to people who might really need this community of faith that we are? His book also raises some other questions. When people do come, how do we respond? Do we really let them in? Radical hospitality goes beyond friendliness. Welcome, in Schnees' words, is a willingness to change our behaviors in order to accommodate the needs and receive the talents of newcomers. Radical hospitality, he says, means realizing that God uses new people to breathe new life into congregations, and that we have to be open to learn from the newcomers God brings our way. What might that mean for us? Are there subtle and maybe not so subtle ways that we make it hard for people to really get in? We learned some hard lessons about this at my church in Rochester. over the 10 years that a number of Burmese and later Congolese refugees became a part of us. We wanted them, we welcomed them, but the cultural differences were challenging. The unspoken rules about what on time means and about when things are supposed to end. The rules about how much it's okay for young children to run around or talk during worship. And about why it took a musical group 5 minutes to get up to the front and get organized to sing, even though they knew they were going to sing that day. We discovered those of us who were Americans could get pretty stuck in our cultural assumptions about the priority of English, about the priority of the clock, and about our middle-class values about how you make decisions. True welcome, radical hospitality, was a lot harder than we anticipated. It usually is. So why should we try? If we're trying just because we think we need more people to support the institution, forget it. It's not worth it, and people will see right through it. Why should we try? Why should we stretch ourselves? Why should we extend our boundaries, move beyond our comfort zones to invite and welcome strangers, to include and adapt to newcomers as church, as families, as individuals? It seems to me the words of Jesus are pretty clear. There is something essential to the life of faith that involves opening ourselves to others. Partly because Jesus says he is the stranger that we welcome. He is the poor, the sick, the prisoner. He is the child we receive into our arms. Jesus taught that we cannot know God, we cannot grow in our experience and love of the goodness of God, except as we learn to love each other, including those who are strange and different from us. Faith and love are about relationships with God and with each other. It's all connected, all interrelated, and you can't have one without the other. Over and over again, Jesus calls us to move out of the narrow confines of our lives into the broader, more expansive living that God calls us to. We can love because God first loved us. We can welcome because we have been welcomed and embraced by God. Remember the story of the prodigal son. The loving, longing father running down the road to welcome his son, throwing his arms around him, calling the servants to prepare a party. This is the image Jesus gives us of God. The loving God runs to meet each of us, to embrace us with hugs and kisses, to throw a party to welcome us. We're called to be part of that. We're called to embody that. We're called to share that with people who have no idea that that's what God and who God is. Can we open our hearts more and more as Jesus calls us to? Can we get out of our own way and see the Spirit of God in every person we run into today and tomorrow? All of us are, after all, the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. They are us, and we are them. We are all broken. We all need love. None of us is better or worse than anyone else in God's eyes. We're all God's children. All of us in need of mercy and grace, and all of us long for a place at the table, and God has a special place for each and every one of us. The party is not complete. The joy is not full until we all find our place. We are all invited. We are all welcome. We all belong.